And good afternoon. Scott Spears along with you on this Monday, July the 24th, 2017. 15 minutes past the hour, 1:15 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. And today we are going to delve into a very interesting story. As most of you know, last week, O.J. Simpson was paroled after 9 years of being in prison. The first available parole date will be October the 1st. A man who knows OJ very well is the author of the Spreading the Juice. He is former retired corrections officer Jeffrey Felix. Mr. Felix, how are you?
Hey, good morning, Scott, and good morning, Ohio.
Yes,
doing
yes.
All right.
Good to talk with you. You know, first thing I want to get into here is, how did you feel, well, going in, did you think OJ was going to get paroled?
Yeah, I thought his chances were about 95%, you know, because he did 9 years right up free, took all the programming, except for, you know, people saw he didn't take the AA class for some reason. He kept his nose clean for 9 years, and that's what the parole board looks at.
When you were watching the parole hearing, what did you think he did right? What did you think he did wrong?
Well, what he did wrong was he said my name in front of 500 million people. And what he did right, he apologized at the end, but he wasn't very remorseful, and he got agitated when they asked him about the property.
In your opinion, this case, the case that he got paroled for, 9 years for armed robbery, is that normal?
No. If you ask the deputy district attorneys and, you know, your regular attorneys, something like that, you know, his first offense, he might have got a year or two and maybe probation. But you also have to remember that they did offer him a deal for 2.5 years, which he would have been out a little over a year and a half. So he turned down the deal.
Why did he do that?
Because he's O.J. Simpson. He didn't think he would be prosecuted.
Why do you think he brought your name up?
I don't know. Maybe the guy loves me so much. He's such a smart guy from USC. Maybe he figures if he throw my name out there in front of 500 million people, maybe I'll sell a few books. I don't think that's what it was. I think he was just mad. I think his attorney got him agitated. I don't know. You saw the monster side of OJ during that parole hearing.
Well, I noticed, I watched the parole hearing, and then when it was over, I saw his attorney come out, and his attorney mentioned you a few times. Why do you think his attorney did that?
Well, the attorney didn't actually mention me. He thought he was going to come out in front of 500 million people and all those microphones and get, you know, have his moment, you know, to become a real attorney now instead of a $2,500 retainer attorney. And the first thing, you know, people were asking him is, who was this Jeffrey Felix? And, you know, that really got him fired up. So, you know, my name is Googled more than his name. And he's not very happy about that.
Would you think OJ would have anything to do with you when he gets out in October?
From the sound of it, probably not. I know where he's going to be living at. So maybe I can make it to where, you know, I can find out where he eats and be there. And see if he approaches me, maybe to apologize to me or talk to me. We'll see what happens.
Well, tell me how this all happened. O.J. Simpson gets convicted. He comes to prison. How did your relationship start?
Well, you know, I met O.J. for the first time in the gym, and we kind of really hit it off. You know, I think he was looking for a buddy, and, you know, I love hearing about his celebrity stories, and over the years, I got him out of a couple jams, so he pretty much, you know, trusted me enough to tell me some stuff, but now, you know, now he's talking all this smack about me. Him and his bald attorney are talking all this smack about me. He kind of has me a little confused, so I don't really know what's going on with him. I don't know, maybe he was just in a bad mindset during the, you know, the hearing, but it's got me, you know, baffled.
What kind of jams would he have been in?
He was in one jam where he got into a heated discussion with an Aryan Nation, a skinhead guy, one of those white supremacist guys. But O.J. just walked away from it. he should have never said anything to him in the first place, but he talked to me a couple of days later when I went to work, and I took care of it with the Arians, and they he apologized to OJ and shook his hand. So it all worked out. Another one is everybody can recall, if you go on the internet, you see the Cookie Monster, where an inmate smuggled some cookies out of the culinary, brought them back to OJ's unit, the workers' unit, and all the other inmates took their cookies into their cells to eat them. Well, OJ ate his cookie on the tier right in front of the officer, and the officer got really upset that it was disrespectful, so she wrote him up. But later on, I talked her out of the write-up and got ripped up. So, you know, there's a few little jams here and there.
When OJ came to the prison that you were working at, obviously you knew the backstory. When the verdict was handed down in the criminal trial, did you think OJ killed his wife and Mr. Goldman?
Well, you know, I thought he had something to do with it because of the blood trail. And now, you know, forensic scientists are saying there was two people involved in that murder. So, you know, OJ's story where the, you know, he told me where the drug dealers came to his house asking for money for Nicole and Ronald, you know, cocaine addiction, could be true. And then OJ, you know, they asked if they can go to Nicole's and, you know, try to get the money out of her or make Ronald sell the drugs at his restaurant, his high-end restaurant, to make back the 30 grand. Well, I think OJ followed them over there, and that's how that size 13, $1,500 shoes got involved. And, you know, the blood, you know, the blood trail back. I don't know if OJ jumped in, you know, hit him with a 3-on-2 tag team, or he tried to pull them off. But that's always a possibility, that the drug dealer story. And that's where the Columbia necktie comes in. So it could be true.
When you first saw O.J. Simpson in prison, did you see him as a legendary football player, movie star, or did you see him as a person who was a criminal?
Oh, no, I saw him as a Heisman Trophy winner, football player, movie star when I first saw him. And he has that charismatic quality where, you know, he has that aura around him where everybody wants to talk to him. So if you've never met him, it's definitely a meet you want to have because you can feel his aura when you're near him. It's kind of really strange.
What is a person like O.J. Simpson, known worldwide, when he goes to prison, what is it like for him? Because most celebrities, a lot of times, don't want to be approached, but he's a prisoner now. Do prisoners approach him? Obviously, guards approach him.
Oh, yeah, everybody did. You know, you've heard of introverts and extroverts, so he's like a super extrovert. And OJ would always say he talked to everybody, but I told him not to talk to women officers, just nod his head, because they could take it the wrong way, and next thing you know, he's in the hole. So, like, when he would see me in the morning, he would say, "Good morning, Officer Felix, sir," and he'd kind of give me like a half a salute, because he knows I hate to be called sir. He would start first thing in the morning, and I'd say, "Really, Juice, we're going there already today?" And he would start laughing, then we'd walk around for a little bit. But everybody said good morning to the Jews, and the Jews said good morning back to them.
Tell me about a typical day in prison for O.J. Simpson or any other prisoner. Were there any differences? Let me ask that first. Were there any difference between how he was treated and other prisoners were treated?
Well, you know, if you read my book, Guarding the Jews, you can see the exceptions for O.J. Simpson. And there are non-written exceptions, you were just told. Like, some of the exceptions would be, you know, he's the only prisoner in the state of Nevada that never had an ID card. He wasn't allowed to carry one because as soon as the gang won at the first prison he was at, somebody went online and tried to sell it. So he's not allowed to sign his name. He gets pulled up front to sign his name for, like, kites, request forms. If you're in a gun tower and there's a fight on the yard, you have to scan the yard first to look for O.J. Simpson because, you know, if you shoot the scatter gun, the shotgun, and you hit O.J. Simpson, it's going to be a bad day for you, the prison, and the state because the media will have a frenzy. You just can't walk up to O.J. and put him in handcuffs. You need sergeant or above approval. You can't go into his cell and do a shakedown without sergeant and above approval and a camera. I mean, there's a lot of exceptions for this guy. He lived rather easy behind, you know, the prison fences.
Tell me about a typical day for him. Just take me through what a day would be like.
Okay, first thing in the morning, OJ lives in a workers unit, so he wakes up at about 5:45, gets dressed, heads down to the culinary to eat, Of course, he bypasses the whole line, goes up there to eat, gets his food, eats. His favorite meal is the eggs and cereal and toast meal. He then heads back to the unit, cleans up, gets over to the gym, like around 6:15, 6:30, he's in the gym working, where he disinfects gym equipment, wipes down the railings. After that, around 10 or 10:30, he'll head back to his unit for a mid-morning nap. And then after that, he'll get up, his celly will cook him some lunch, they'll hang out on the tier for a little bit, maybe go walk the track, maybe he might go out there and umpire a softball game. And then around maybe 2:45, 3 o'clock, he locks down for the 3:30 p.m. count. 3:30 p.m. count gets over between 4 and 4:15. He heads to dinner at about 4:30. He's the first one in line, first unit. If he will go to chow, if there's a cookie, if there's cookies or cake involved, he doesn't eat the main tray, the main entree. So if there's no cookies and no cake, you will not see OJ. If there's cookies or cake, you'll see OJ at the front of the line. Then he heads back to the unit. For the rest of the night, between like 6 and 9 o'clock, he'll play dominoes or he'll play cards, like poker on the tier. And then they lock down for count for the rest of the night, like around 9 or 9:30.
What was OJ's cell like? What were his living conditions?
Well, he lived in a larger cell than a normal inmate. There's, you got to remember, Scott, there's four medical cells in a unit. They're about a third larger, and OJ always had the same cell, Unit 6A, cell 64A. And so he has about a third larger of a cell, and which gives him an extra window. He's right next to the showers. He has a microwave pretty much right outside his door. So his living conditions were pretty good. And the amenities of the Lovelock Correctional Center, as I've been quoted, you know, it's like a cruise ship surrounded by barbed wire. So, I mean, there's basketball, softball, volleyball, some kind of like hibachi ball game, ping pong, gym weight equipment, exercise equipment like bicycles and stuff like that. I mean, it's seriously like a cruise ship with barbed wire. He lived pretty good out there.
You know, Jeff, this is interesting because it sounds like prison isn't so bad. I mean, what are the bad parts here? Why does he want to be paroled? Why does he want out? Because this doesn't sound bad.
Well, you know, OJ loves the women, and there's no women in prison. They're just dudes that think they're women. So OJ never went there, even though, you know, the media said he did. He never went there. So, I mean, he loves women. He loves his favorite food, calamari. He wants to get out and eat that. He wants to play golf. OJ lives for golfing. So, you know, he has a lot of reasons he wants to get out. But if you're going to be in prison, the inmates in Nevada have a saying, Lovelock is easy time, very easy time.
Are most prisons like that, or is that really an exception?
Well, no, that's the exception prison. Because you got to remember, when they opened up Lovelock back in 1995 when I was there, they opened it up correctly, where they had all the guards in there. They brought in 20 inmates at a time. So that prison's always been run correctly, and all the inmates want to go there. So they go through the system of other prisons to get there, so they behave themselves. And once they get to Lovelock, they will behave themselves so they can hang out on the cruise ship there. So it's a well-run prison that's very laid-back.
Now, when you're first talking to O.J. Simpson, you see him as the Heisman Trophy winner. What are early conversations like?
We mostly talked about his days at USC. We talk about golf courses we both played. Because, you know, we both enjoy golf, even though I'm pretty sure I can beat him in golf. And my son's shaking his head, no, I could beat OJ in golf. We talked about that. We talked about, you know, some of the women that he conquered. He's very proud of some of the women that he conquered. And just mostly sports and golf, I think we talked about.
What did he want to stay in tune with in prison? What was something that was going on the outside that he was interested in? Did he have any thoughts on the presidential election?
His main thoughts for the outside were all the sports, football drafts. He liked keeping up with the Kardashians because everybody knows that, you know, Khloe might be his daughter. That's who he spoke to once a week. But mostly sports.
Who did OJ like to have visits from? Who came and saw him?
I don't know whoever visited OJ. I wasn't there. I worked Monday through Thursday, so I wasn't there on visiting days.
We hear of so many people associated with him. Of course, F. Lee Bailey is still around, Robert Shapiro, a lot of his friends. Did he ever talk about anybody? Give his thoughts?
No, he never really talked about those guys. I'm sure he thinks highly of them. They got him off a double murder rap.
Did you ever talk about the murder?
Yeah, I asked him a few times if he did it, and he would just give me that look, like, we're not going there. He would just give me that mean look.
But he would never say no.
He never said no, and he never said yes. He would just give me that look.
Now,
like, Felix, we're not going there today.
Well, this congenial guy, who you would consider a friend, I would think, at that, why do you think he wouldn't just, if you're innocent, you say no?
Well, I don't think he liked answering that question. It's like he had, supposedly he had this sign, I never signed, everybody's talking about, if you ask me, I'm just going to say no, or something like that. So, he did have a sign above his door, everybody, you know, claims. I never saw it, but he just won't answer that question.
What was the other inmates' interactions with O.J. like?
All the inmates loved O.J. O.J. shared his food. O.J. took, you know, the younger inmates underneath his wing sometimes when, you know, the trouble would start. I mean, O.J. didn't talk down to people. He respected people. And, you know, he was, like, on a level with them. So, you know, it wasn't that I'm no O.J. Simpson Heisman Trophy winner. I'm better than you. That's not the way it was. He was just an outgoing guy who wanted to talk to everybody.
Were there people there, maybe guards, maybe other inmates, who did think he was a murderer and let it be known?
Well, you know, a few of the guards thought, you know, he was a murderer. And even some of the inmates, you know, that aren't in tune with what's going on, they thought he was in there for the double murder. So, I mean, I met a lady on the street the other day who recognized me, and she said, I can't believe it, Jeffrey. They let O.J. Simpson out on double murder after 9 years. I couldn't sit there and try to explain it to her. I said, you're right. America got screwed. So, I mean, people aren't in tune with what's really going on.
Are you surprised that all the news channels last week interrupted their broadcast to cover his parole hearing?
No, I'm not surprised at all. And I was live on ESPN outside the lines. And when he said my name, I think I was one of six people that were going to go live afterwards. And the lady told me in my earplug, you're going last, Jeffrey. I said, 10-4. And all of a sudden, OJ threw my name out there. He said, Jeffrey Felix. And all of a sudden, my earpiece said, you're going first, Jeffrey. I said, imagine that. And that's when Mark Furman said something, and I kind of put Mark Furman in his place. So he didn't say another word to me, you know, for the rest of the 2 hour.
For people who didn't see it, a lot of people did. But what did remind people what O.J. said during his parole hearing about you, and take us through what you and Mark Furman, the little incident there on ESPN.
Well, O.J. called me a fraud. He said he didn't even know me. First he said my name during the actual parole hearing. People like Jeffrey Felix or something like that. And as soon as he threw my name, I had my phone sitting next to me because I wasn't going live yet. And I had 130 interview requests from Fox, NBC, CBS within 30 seconds. And, you know, him doing that was really crazy. I mean, and then they go off camera because the parole board went back in the back. And the audio visual guy explained to everybody that mic was off, that mic was off, and that mic was hot. So O.J. was told that mic was hot, and that's when he called me a fraud in the mic, and his attorney said, no, he saved you from some cookies, from a cookie, and O.J. said, yeah, he rolled his eyes. So, I mean, O.J. put the bus driver uniform on and ran me over, and then after the parole hearing, he gave the bus driver uniform to his attorney, and his bald attorney back over me. Now, the question about Mark Furman got on the speaker in my ear, earplug, and he said to me, he said, when they said I'm going first, he said, Felix, you're not even law enforcement. You're wannabe law enforcement. You're nothing but a prison guard. And I said, yeah, Mark, but I made it my 20 years without perjuring myself on the stand. And that kind of just shut him up pretty good.
Well, you know, it's interesting because a lot of people find this fascinating. When you were in prison with OJ, did you ever talk to him about the possibility of doing a book?
No, but he knew I was writing a book because we were walking the track some one day, and I was hitting him up for some information, and he stopped. And when OJ and I stopped walking, you know, because he's very competitive, he was trying to lose weight, when he stopped, he looked at me. He said, what are you, writing a book? And I looked at him because I don't know why. I said, maybe. Because at that time, I was thinking about writing a book. I've been taking notes for 7 years. But I said, maybe. So the juice knew that I was writing a book. And then a couple of days later, he pulled me up. He goes, I'm not concerned about it. He goes, I just call myself Matt. I said, why do you call yourself Matt, Juice? He goes, because everybody steps on OJ to make money.
Well, tell me this. That's an interesting statement for OJ to make. I want to go back a little bit. 7 years earlier, why did you start taking notes?
Because the first time I spoke with OJ on the yard, he was talking about, you know, being in Donald Trump's first marriage. I think it was Marla Mapes. He was talking about times with Howard Stern, going to Lucille Ball's house and hanging out with her. And, you know, I thought to myself, I should just take some notes on this dude. Whenever we talk, I'll write some notes down. Because you never know, this could turn into, you know, an article in a newspaper, you know, or maybe even a book one day. You know, I went to UNLV, so I knew I couldn't write the book myself. So after 7 years of notes, I kept them in a little drawer in the kitchen. And we were all at dinner one night at the Olive Garden, and my attorney, Stephen Coppolo, looked at me and he goes, you know, you might have a book there. And I was like, because I never told anybody. I went the whole 7 years. My wife didn't know. Nobody knew I was doing this. So 2 months before, we were at dinner, and then Coppolo said, you might have a book there. And he said, do you know Corey, who's Corey Levitan, is a writer? And then, you know, we set up a meeting because we were all at dinner. We set up a meeting a few days later at Steve Coppolo's work, and we came to some agreements for Corey to help me write the book. So it worked out pretty well.
What did you want the book to be? What people reading it, what was the hook for you?
Well, the reason that I started taking notes on the book is the first 2 months OJ was in there, the tabloid said he got beat up by a white supremacist in the prison. Another one said he had a hunger strike. And I just wanted to let the people know what was really going on in there. Because, you know, that's just a bunch of BS that those things happen. So people know what's really going on behind razor wire.
Now, the book Guarding the Juice, what do you feel it came off as? As somebody who didn't know you, didn't know O.J. Simpson, how do you think they would read that book?
Well, a lot of people tell me reading that book is like sitting next to me on a flight and me telling you guys a story. You know, everything in that book is authentic. And there's no, like, smoking gun in the book. That's why I don't know why OJ was so upset. I mean, I think he was upset over the cookie story when he should have been upset, you know, over somebody coming out saying that, you know, that he was pleasuring himself and a woman officer caught him. You see, those are the things that people, you know, believe but never happen. So the book came out just to let people know what's really going on behind prison walls there.
Well, tell me, I want to go from one end to the other here about the book, and there's a lot in between, so people might still want to get the book Guarding the Juice. But what do you consider the best story in the book that O.J. Simpson comes off looking the best?
I think he comes out looking the best when his softball team wins the championship, because O.J. Simpson was a manager of the Giants, because, you know, he's from the Bay Area. And his team was always getting stomped, you know, right during the playoffs or second or third round of the playoffs. And then finally OJ put this team together. I called it at the time the Dream Team. And it was mostly over religious stuff. You know, he just switched to Islam, and he put this team together of mostly, you know, Islamic people. But he had a few, you know, non-Islamics in there, as I called them, ringers. And OJ won the championship. They actually came back from 3-0 to none and won four games in a row to win the championship, which it was pretty big because all the inmates that come on the yard, there'd be 800 inmates watching this one game. So that was one of the funnest things I wrote in my book, and that was one of OJ's best times in the prison.
And what would you think of something that you wrote that he would not like? The worst, him at his worst.
Well, obviously, it's a cookie story. You know, he doesn't think the cookie story exists, or he doesn't think it should have got out there. I mean, big deal. The juice was eating a cookie on the tier. I mean, I don't understand why he's so upset about the cookies. I mean, if you could do 9 years in a prison, and the only thing you do wrong is eat an illegal cookie, I mean, that's not very much.
When you were getting ready to retire, what were your conversations like with him then?
I was counting down the days, and OJ really didn't like that because, you know, he was hoping to get his appeal, which got shot down. He did get his first parole board in 2013. So when I was counting down the days, it was making time go by slow. It was slow time for OJ. So he asked me not to count down the days anymore because I would come in and say, 63 days left, 22 working days, you know, because you use all your sick leave at the end. So, you know, that and our last day there, when we sat on the park bench in front of the unit, talking about, you know, OJ focusing still on his parole, don't get in trouble. You know, when you get out, keep your plans together. So that's pretty much how I ended up my last days.
In your last conversations, did you ever talk any more about the book?
No. The book conversation never came up. It was just for him to keep clean, focus, don't get in any trouble. And then he told me to be careful, play a lot of golf, and then when he gets out, we can go play golf together in Florida.
Now, when the book came out, did you hear anything back from the prison that OJ doesn't like this?
Yes, I got the word back from the confidential informant when he saw me on TV that he wasn't happy that, you know, he trusted me because our conversations would end usually with OJ saying, hey, this doesn't go any further. I said, of course, Juice, that goes without saying. And next thing you know, here I am on national TV telling what was going on. But during an interview with Entertainment Tonight a few weeks later, I apologized to OJ on national TV, and the word got back to me right away that he accepted it, and his name is Matt, and he knew I was going to step on him and make money.
Knowing that he had told you, you know, this is doesn't go any further than you and me, why did you still write the book?
Well, because I still thought the public should know what's going on behind the razor wire, because I thought at that time he might be doing the full, you know, 33 years or most of it. So, and, you know, Scott, the stuff I wrote in my book, you know, looked pretty good for him. I mean, some of the stories are in there that him and I talked about, but it looked pretty good. You know, I don't know why he was so upset. I mean, other people have done him a lot worse than me, you know, but he did get over it. He said our golf game was back on, but obviously from what you saw at the parole hearing, I don't think our golf game is on anymore.
Did you ever think about going and visiting him after you retired?
Yeah, well, no. The only reason I would go visit him would be if he would have got a dump from the parole board and I thought he would go into a state of depression. I would try to go in there and, you know, do what I could to make sure, you know, he didn't do anything stupid, because everybody knows that O.J. Simpson has suicidal tendencies. Remember when he held the gun to his head in the back of the Bronco while AC was driving. So, but that didn't happen. So, you know, he's all good now. He's ready to get out and focus.
You're not in touch with him, but have you been in touch with anybody since last week? How he's acting? What is it like inside there now?
Well, you know, I'm getting stories about how he's acting in there. I'm not ready to report on it yet because it hasn't been confirmed. Once I confirm what's going on in there, I better tell the public, because, you know, Jeffrey Felix tells it the way it is. I don't want to, only one person has told me, you know, one of my confidential informants told me what's going on in there now, but he is in lockup now. He's in isolation for his protection. And I think I'm a couple days away from confirming of what's going on in the prison right now.
Without telling us what it is, obviously, what would it have to do with? Because I'm thinking, I don't know anything about the prison system, but if somebody's paroled, he goes back and just waits it out. What would be so interesting about what's happened since then?
Well, you know, you got to remember, over the last 9 years, you got to remember, O.J. Simpson is an actor, first of all. So over the last 9 years, you know, he did his best work, you know, and now looking at it, maybe the parole board should have given him an Oscar instead of a parole, you know, because, you know, I'm hearing his behavior might be changing in there and, you know, some other things. So I'm not too sure. They might be seeing the real O.J. now, but I have not confirmed anything yet.
Do you think you ever saw the real O.J.?
I think I saw the real O.J. at the parole hearing. That's the first time. When he got agitated over his property, when he threw me out there to the wolves, you know, that's the real O.J. You know, he used to preach, you know, I'm not a rat. I'm not a canary. Well, you know, he threw the prison out there. He said the Norteños were fighting with the Serranos in the prison, which is 100% not true. There hasn't been an altercation of Lovelock in a long time. You know, he called me a fraud. So, you know, I think we saw the real O.J. And like I said in the book, I think there's two different O.J.s. You know, you got the nice O.J. and you got the monster O.J. So, you know, he looked pretty agitated when they talked about his property.
What do you... let me put it this way. What do you think happened after seeing now the real O.J. and the O.J. that you knew? What do you think happened back in 1994, the night Nicole... Simpson and Ron Goldman were killed. What is your best guess?
Well, you know, O.J. and Nicole were in a very weird relationship. And supposedly O.J. was watching her, you know, have relations with other guys through windows. You know, he was very jealous of her. Yes, very possessive of her. And I think she was very possessive of him. And, you know, I think she's one of those women that could push his buttons. And she did that a lot. And, you know, O.J. would, you know, I guess he was beating her, obviously, from the 911 calls. You know, so it was like a situation where, you know, O.J. beats, she runs her mouth, or probably O.J. starts it. She runs her mouth. O.J. tells her to stop. She pushes his buttons. He does some kind of violence to her. She calls 911, and it's all good. Well, this goes on and on and on, and I think she was too scared to leave him because of the, you know, O.J. being possessive. So, you know, she should have got out of the relationship. She should have split, you know. If I was her brother, like her sister, she should have got out of L.A. for a while until O.J. would settle down with a new girl. But supposedly, when O.J., broke up with her, it looked like his next girlfriend looked just like her, which is kind of weird also. But I think O.J. had something to do with the murders. I don't know if he did them himself, but he was definitely at the crime scene. So no matter what, in California, that would be, you know, he'd still go to prison, but he was definitely at the scene, Scott.
So that being said, would that compute with the 7 years that he was your friend, that you were friends with a murderer?
Yeah, you know, but I'm friends with a lot of murderers. You know, when guys get out of prison, you know, now that I'm retired, I can hang out with them. And you got to remember, most murderers only do it once. It's a crime of passion. You know, the everybody has a moment in their lives where, you know, they're dating a girl or something's going on and they got to make a decision. You know, you see your girl messing around with some other dude, you're going to walk up, you know, and give them both Colombian neckties. Are you going to shoot them, or are you going to walk away? Well, O.J. didn't walk away. He made a wrong decision at the wrong time. You know, but everybody gets that decision at least once in their life, and he did not do the right one.
And this is a tough question to ask, but obviously O.J. is not happy with you at this point. So we think he's not happy with you. And you also think he might have murdered these people, or in fact did murder these people. O.J. Simpson's not a typical murderer if he is a murderer, because he's got access, he's got money, he's got a pension. Are you fearful? You have put a smudge, made a man angry who apparently has a pretty fiery temper by your own admission.
Yes, you know, he's fired up, but you got to remember, he's going to get over it. He's going to get out of prison sometime in October. He's not going to think about me. He's going to think about golfing, thinking about his family. And I don't think he'll ever come back to Nevada. According to OJ, he's never going to come back to Nevada. And if I do go to Florida, more than likely I'll be carrying, you know, because I'm a retired peace officer. I'm not the best shot in the world, but I will be carrying if I go to the state of Florida, definitely.
Do you plan, I mean, if it was today, if OJ was out, as you say, because you would like to go to a restaurant where he was going to be, just to see what he would do, would you do that? I mean, is that a plan in your mind come October?
Yeah, you know, it is kind of a plan in my mind because I'd like to wait maybe 6 months, see how he's doing out there. And then, you know, I worked for a private investigator for years, so I know I can, you know, locate him. And I have no issue going to a restaurant, seated maybe two or three tables away from OJ and see if he approaches me. That way he can say, you know, he knows I don't like apologies, but he can say, hey, I take all that back, Felix. But life is good right now. You know, I went on the internet and all you did was talk good about me. I deserve a parole, this, this, and this. You know, we'll see. Where he could come over to the table, you know, and tell me how he feels, which is great too. You know, vent to me. He's always vented to me. So we'll see what happens.
Would you,
if that actually happens.
Would you be fearful that he would? I mean, you said yourself that you would be carrying, so there must be some fear that he might grab a hold of you or try something. You might not think.
Well, he's not going to do it in public. I mean, I'm not going to go to his house and go take a hot tub with him right away. You know, in a public restaurant like an IHOP or something, if he's in there, you know, he's not going to get loud in there because, you know, everybody and their mom's got, you know, phones with cameras and videos on them. So, I mean, that would be a great setting, you know, for OJ to see me and say, hey, Felix, you know, I should have never said your name. You know, you talk good about me, you know, or, hey, you bag of crap. What's up with the cookie story?
Well, that's...
You know, he's not going to... Go ahead.
No, that's a very interesting thing you just pointed out there, that when he went to prison, we were just on the cusp of the cell phone age, but it was not a YouTube viral video world. What is O.J. Simpson's life going to be like if he does decide to go to IHOP now? Everybody's going to... He doesn't have to... There wasn't a lot of pictures of O.J. Simpson before. Paparazzi followed him, but he goes anywhere. He goes to the grocery store now, and somebody's going to take a picture.
Oh, absolutely. People love O.J. still, and they're going to walk up and ask O.J. to take selfies with them. I'm telling you, 90% of the people out there are going to be positive towards O.J. because the people that hate O.J. for the murders or whatever reason they hate O.J. for beating Nicole, they're not going to approach him. They might give him a dirty look, but they're not going to say anything to him. So, I mean, the people that like O.J. are going to walk up to him.
What?
And, you know, tell... Go ahead.
No, finish your thought there.
Yeah, because why would you, if you don't like someone, why would you confront him in public? I mean, you could say, hey, that guy's a jerk. Because I have people right now, 8 out of 10 people come up to me now that recognize me and say, hey, you were professional, that guy ran you over. Why would you lie in your book? Because, like I tell people, if I was a drama queen and I wanted to sell 10 million books, I could have lied and said, you know, O.J. told me he confessed the murders to me. Or O.J. Simpson, you know, I could lie and say he was dating dudes in the prison, which isn't true. You know what I'm saying? I could have said something like that. That'd be front page. I could have sold 10 million books. But, you know, I didn't do that. I just spoke the truth in there. And I try to keep it positive. If anybody knows me from the prison, I try to keep things positive. So, you know, it's just the way it is.
O.J. Simpson is 70 years old. What kind of health is he in?
Hey, he looked great on TV. He must have lost 60 or 70 pounds. I knew he was losing weight because I heard he was losing weight. But he looked fantastic. I mean, he was walking in there. You know, he had all those knee surgeries. He looked like he's ready to hit the golf course. I mean, he couldn't be any more than 240 pounds right now. 6'3", 240. I mean, he looked great.
We don't really know O.J. Simpson. And again, getting back to that idea of any place he goes, people are going to know him when he gets out. People are a little nutty nowadays, and it would not shock me if somebody yelled out to him, murderer. What is O.J.'s temperament like, do you think?
Well, first of all, you know there's only three people in history that are known on all seven continents. You got Muhammad Ali, Barack Obama, and O.J. Simpson. And, you know, he's had a lady that came up to him on a golf course and shook his hand and then said, wow, I've never shaken the hand of a murderer before. And that stuff gets to O.J. I mean, he said, you know, his feelings were hurt for 2 or 3 or 4 days over that. So if someone just yells murderer, that's not going to bother him. But if somebody gets personal with him and walks up and says, hey, you know, you're a murderer or does something strange like that, that affects O.J. Because in his mind, he didn't do it.
He believes he didn't do it, he wants to tell people he didn't do it.
I think he believes he didn't do it. I think he put it out of his mind. It's like my old buddy that used to give, you know, those lie detector tests when I worked for Corporate Intelligence International in Vegas. He said, if you believe it's true, Felix. So O.J. believes he didn't commit the murder, so he didn't commit them. And that's where, you know, the People versus O.J. Simpson, I don't know if that show is 100% accurate, because a couple of years before that show happened, O.J. told me that Bob had him take a lie detector test, and he passed it with flying colors. Now, why would he tell me that out of the blue when everybody saw in the FX series that he failed the lie detector test? So, you know, there's a lot of things out there. He believes he didn't do it, so of course he passed the lie detector test.
What do you think the rest of his days are going to be like?
I think O.J.'s going to get up around 8:30 or 9 o'clock in the morning, like he does on his days off. He's going to eat some breakfast. He's going to go do some golfing. He likes to eat like peanut butter and jelly sandwiches for lunch, or like turkey sandwiches for lunch that his girlfriend used to pack for him. He's going to eat some lunch, go back out, golf again, maybe go to a hot tub or a jacuzzi, have a big dinner, and he'll be asleep probably by 8:30 or 9 o'clock at night. He's going to lay low, and you won't hear another peep out of that guy.
Did O.J. Simpson get away with murder?
Maybe he did. But he got away with some kind of... He might have got away with murder, but I don't know if he actually committed the murder. He saw what was going on. He got away with at least being accomplice to murder.
Why would he go there to watch?
Why would he go there to her house?
Yeah, how does he become an accomplice? Why, in your mind, would he have been there?
He could have been there for a couple of reasons. When he told the drug dealers, if that story's true, that they can go over there and no harm comes to Nicole, he might have followed them over there, you know, just to see what was going on. And maybe he, you know, saw, I don't think O.J. Simpson knows how to do a Colombian necktie. You know, drug dealers do. That's where it came from. So he might have went over there, saw what was going on. He might have came in. He might have came in afterwards.
Mm.
But, you know, we know he was there. Not too many people have $1,500 Italian shoes. I don't have any in my closet. I got a lot of Vans in my closet, not those expensive shoes. And his blood trail was there. But you also have to remember that, you know, like guys like Mark Furman, you know, racist cops who, you know, you can be a racist all you want, but you can't take it to work when you're law enforcement. You know, more than likely, Mark Furman planted the glove. We know Mark Furman lied on the stand. So, you know, people like that just helped O.J. get away with whatever he did.
You know, Jeffrey, hearing your story is very fascinating, and a lot of people just heard your name for the first time last week during this whole parole hearing, and a lot of people do feel, forgive me, that you wrote a book about a man who is a murderer, you've made money off of his back, and that it was your job to be there, that a reporter or somebody else could not have done that because they wouldn't have had access. So you used your access to make money off of somebody who murdered two people. What do you say to people who make that accusation?
Well, you know, it wasn't for making money at the start because, you know, I sold a few books, but it was mostly to let people know what was really going on in there. I mean, I got a great pension, you know, so it was just to let people know what was going on in the prison. But when O.J. shot my name out to 500 million people, I mean, book sales have got to take off, you know, and it's just more accounting BS for me. But, you know, I haven't got a check yet because the royalty checks come out quarterly. But, I mean, I didn't plan on making very much money on the book. you know, selling the book. I plan on making maybe making the money back that it cost me, you know, to have the writer write it for me.
Has the book made a lot of money for you?
It's done okay. The book's done all right. I can't complain. I mean, I'm in San Diego in a giant timeshare hanging out. I mean, the book's doing all right. Go ahead.
No, in the story of your life, where does this period rank? I don't know the numbers on the book, but I mean, was it a very good idea for you? Would you, if you could go back and do it again, would you not write the book?
I don't know. You know, some days I feel like I shouldn't have wrote the book, because maybe OJ and I could have hung out right away when he got out. I could have went in. You know, I could have been there at the parole hearing. I could have, you know, maybe said something to the parole board for OJ. I lost a couple of friends out of writing the book. Some ex-COs called me a liar, and I don't know what I lied about, but they were upset because they think, you know, I was making millions on the books before. Books don't make millions of dollars anymore. That doesn't happen anymore. But I also made a lot of new friends. I mean, I have people that are now celebrities that are my friends that call me up. Or, like, I'm going to go to L.A. today and hang out with a couple of celebrities later on today. So, you know, if I could do it all again, I'd probably do it again, you know, because, you know, a lot of people said it took a lot of stones to write the book. But when I was writing the book, it wasn't very fun writing the book. You know, I had a really good writer. But as you all know, writers are kind of strange. I mean, I would get a call at 2:00 in the morning from my writer saying, "Jeff, we have a problem." What's going on? What kind of problem do we have at 2:00 in the morning? This can't wait. And then, you know, once we got a publisher, we had to meet deadlines. We had to deal with photographers, you know, for the covers. You know, it was just, it's a lot of work writing a book. People think you just write a book and turn it into a publisher. It's more work than you think. And once it's published, you get more work because now you got, you know, you have to deal with people, you have to deal with interviews. And we had a publicist. I had to let her go because she was, you know, stealing money from us. So, I mean, now I just do my own, you know, I do my own scheduling, which turns out to be a disaster half the time. I scheduled two interviews, MSNBC and the BBC at the same time the other day. Which didn't work out very well.
I can imagine. Well, I appreciate you coming on with us, but you know, I do think, do you understand people's anger that no other prison guards did this over a 9-year period, and that it has given you some celebrity, maybe not money, but you say you're going to go hang out with some celebrities today, why that in of itself might anger people?
I don't know why that would anger people. You know, all I did was speak the truth in the book. And, you know, I thought for sure that other prison guards were going to try to write something. I thought for sure a caseworker person was going to write something because they retired maybe 6 months after he got there. And then I thought, you know, some administration was going to write something. And I was always hoping that nobody would write anything and OJ wouldn't get shipped from the prison. That's the two things I always hoped for. And it ended up being, you know, I waited the 7 years. I wrote the book, got the publisher, and it's out there. And for me, meeting celebrity people, I kind of earned that. You know, I do all these talk shows, radio shows. You know, I'm out there, and that's what, you know, celebrities like. And most of these celebrities are pretty laid back. They're really good people. And, you know, and also I've hooked up with a few buddies that were in high school and college with me that I haven't talked to forever. You know, now they saw me out there, and, you know, they like to hang out with me again as friends again. So it worked out okay for me.
And you would, it sounds to me, and maybe I'm wrong, that you would still like to be friends with O.J. Simpson.
Oh, absolutely. You know, him and I got along great. I mean, we actually talked like buddies. You know, we'd walk the track, talk about, you know, my youngest son was on the football team when he was like 12, 13, and they put me as the offensive line coach. Well, I don't know anything about offensive line. I play tennis and golf. You know, well, OJ put blocking. He made papers of blocking schemes for me. Told me, you know, drills to run for the kids. You know, I would take my, you know, weekly game to OJ, my weekly plan of, you know, the head coach would tell me, you know, what kind of plays we're going to run this week. And the team actually made the playoffs and we almost won a game. I mean, that team's never made the playoffs before in history in Fernley, Nevada. And we actually made the playoffs. And, you know, O.J. helped. I mean, and you know, he won me, I think, 3 years in a row of fantasy football because I copied his team every year. So him and I could talk about fantasy football together, and he's a fantasy football freak. He's the best there is at it.
You know, Jeff, we're about out of time here, but the last question I want to ask, and just on behalf of, you know, everybody may be listening, do you think those things in a relationship between a prison guard and a prisoner are ethical?
Well, you got to remember, you know, I was tasked by administration just to make sure nothing happened to O.J. And over the 7 years that I guarded him, you know, you can't become compromised. And he never asked to become compromised. He didn't say, hey, Felix, you know, can I have some of that, you know, food? Or, hey, can you bring me this in? Or can you mail this for me? He never crossed that line. And he knew if he did, I would correct him. I probably wouldn't go up front and rat him out because it didn't happen. But he knew the line not to cross. He didn't cross it. You know, and I got tight with a few inmates in there in my day without crossing. Remember, Lovelock is a different kind of prison. You know, it's a kind where, you know, officers say good morning to inmates. Inmates say good morning to officers. And, you know, it's the inmates knew that they could report something to me and I could normally, hopefully, fix it without going up front to operations. So, you know, the line was never crossed with O.J. And I could walk that. I could, if you ever interview some other correction officers working Lovelock, I can work both sides. I'm one of the best there is at working both sides of the law.
It's a very interesting story. And, Jeff, as I messaged you through email, I hope you do come back once we get a chance to read the book here. And in a couple days, I hope you might come back and give us this information as soon as it's clear what O.J. is doing in prison.
Yeah, yeah. Because if you guys report that, you guys will be the king of the world right there.
Well,
so
let's
see what happens, and let's see if I can get a confirmation. I don't like to report things until I get a triple confirmation.
Well,
we're going to see what happens over the next few days.
If you get that confirmation, you'll come here first.
Absolutely. I'm thinking about it. You guys are number one on my list right now. That was a great interview, Scott.
Thank you so much, Jeffrey Felix. Very interesting story. You take care, and hopefully we'll talk soon.
Ohio, have a great day, and thank you.
Bye bye. Well, folks, you never know. Tomorrow, Effley Bailey and maybe Jeffrey Felix later on in the week. Stay tuned. This is Scott Spears heading for the dugout.
Joined by a conservative icon, Mrs. Phyllis Schlafly. Phyllis, how many conventions have you been to?
Well, I...